My earliest memory is of being behind a large group of people. An old man with snowy white hair moved backwards and forwards, distributing small white objects to the adults in front of me. A few years later, having now received my first Holy Communion, there were numerous occasions when my father woke me up in response to a knock on the front door. One of the priests had called to the house to ask if I could be his congregation for a very early morning mass. More than 30 years before the question of female altar servers was ever raised, I sat in a dimly lit church, answering the Latin responses as the priest celebrated mass. It was a unique privilege, one that contributed towards my conviction that the mass is about a real God, real people and real lives. The mass could not be separated from everything that is precious and meaningful in life. It is now more than 40 years since English was first introduced into the liturgy. The world has changed a great deal since then. Society has also undergone many alterations, yet still the Church continues its mission of bringing the message of God's love and salvation to each and every individual, whoever they are, wherever they are, and whatever might be their occupations and preoccupations. Archbishop Mark Coleridge of Canberra in Australia is heavily involved in working to make the liturgy even more truly representative of its original meaning and intent. He explains.
My function is to be the chairman of what's called the Roman Missal Editorial Committee, which is a small expert committee that helps the 11 bishops of ICEL, the International Commission on English in the Liturgy, to produce the texts which are then sent to the bishops' conferences for their yea or nay, and then once the bishops' conferences have said yea or nay, it goes to the Holy See for final approval. So ours is a humble little work, a six-person committee, and I just happen to be the chair of that.
Archbishop Coleridge himself says, looking at the prayers of the Mass, has made him even more conscious of the richness of the language used.
Well, I've been thrust into the business of liturgical translation in a way that I certainly didn't foresee when I was made a bishop a little over 4 years ago. But I must say it's come to me as a most extraordinary gift, and it's really an education in the extraordinary riches of the Roman Missal. And I now think that if you could take people through the Missal step by step and teach them to see and hear what's there, it would be a magnificent initiation into the depths of Christian and Catholic life. Although I did my seminary training and have functioned for over 30 years as a priest using the Missal, I didn't realise the extraordinary riches that are there until I was plunged into this work, as it were, willy-nilly.
What was the original language used for the celebration of Mass? It appears that there has been a gradual progress through time from one language to another. Christianity is a religion with its roots stretching far back into history.
There is an extraordinary history to this whole task. And in a sense, it's hard to know where to stop when you begin tracing the history back, because in one sense, it goes back to the Second Vatican Council. But the roots of this process of Englishing the Roman Rite go much, much further back in time than to the Second Vatican Council. And you could argue that they go back at least to the moment historically when the Hebrew Bible was translated into Greek, or when the Christian liturgy was translated from its original Greek into Latin, or when the Bible was then translated into Latin by St. Jerome.
Archbishop Coleridge points out one important difference between the development of Christianity and of Islam.
Christianity from its very beginning has been a translating language. And this is one of the things that would distinguish it, say, from Islam. Islam really insists that to read the Quran, you must read it in Arabic. And I'm told the Arabic of the Quran is glorious, so why not read it in Arabic? But that's not so, and never has been, with Christianity. We have always said that we translate from the beginning. So we are a translating faith. So in that sense, that what's going on now with the Missal, and also, I should add, with the lectionary, is a process which takes us somehow to the heart of Christianity, taking the Word made flesh and making that Word flesh in yet another new way and a new moment in time.
But Christianity is not Islam. The Mass is something treasured from its earliest days. Why produce another translation of the Missal and the Lectionary when surely that happened after the Second Vatican Council? Is the Church producing change for the sake of change? Archbishop Coleridge continues.
But then when the bishops of the Second Vatican Council decided to admit the vernacular, they were reaching beyond all the dreadful controversies of the Reformation, and they were plunging the Catholic Church back into the stream of what's often called historical consciousness. Time was impinging upon the Church in a new way. Now, of course, the bishops at the Council didn't imagine that we would go as we did from Latin into English almost totally. What they had in mind was that there would be the use of some vernacular at some point, but that Latin would remain by and large the language of the liturgy. And what they said was that the bishops' conferences could apply for permission to use the language in certain parts of the Mass.
What happened was something that even the bishops had not expected.
What happened, and I'm not sure that anyone foresaw it, except perhaps the Holy Spirit, was that bishops around the world began to ask for a kind of total permission, so that willy-nilly what you had was a move from Latin into the vernacular languages, all but totally. Now, as I say, I doubt that that was in the mind at all of the fathers of the Second Vatican Council. I also doubt that they understood or could have understood the full scope of that fateful decision to, as it were, cast the bark of Peter onto the stream of time in a new way. Because you couldn't just simply go from the grand fixities of the Latin into grand fixities of vernacular languages, because there's a contradiction in that. A vernacular language, a spoken language, is changing all the time, and we're seeing that in English. And that's one of the reasons why we have this new translation going on at the moment. So in the sense that the vernacular is changing all the time, is in a constant state of flux, you can't control the process. And the great hieratic fixities of Latin, admirable and creative as they may have been, are simply not reproducible in any vernacular language. In that sense, the cat is out of the bag, and I don't see any alternative to that. So we have cast our boat upon a stream that will take us in directions we didn't foresee and perhaps don't always find comfortable. But I think that's the prime historical perspective that you need to bring to bear upon the business of retranslating the Missal.